Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to 3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
هذا البرنامج أنتج وبعث على محطة 3CR راديو بفيتروي فيكتوريا على ما هو كان دائما وإلى أبدا سوف يكون أرض الشعب الكولن. الورنجري، بونورونغ، واثرونغ، تونغرونغ والدجاجة وورونغ ناس. نحن نتقدم بأحر الاحترام لكبارهم ونحتفل بعشائرهم وحضرتهم المستمر.
This program was produced and first broadcast at 3CR Community Radio in Fitzroy, Victoria, on what is, always was, and forever will be the lands of the Kulin Nation, the Wurundjeri, the Boonawurrung, Wathaurong, Tungurung, and Jajawurrung peoples. We pay our respect to their elders and celebrate their continuing culture. Welcome to We Weren't Born Yesterday, a project by the Queering the Air Collective at 3CR. In this program, we'll be hearing from voices within the queer Arab community speaking about language, heritage, representation, and identity in Australia. The queer Arab community in Australia is often caught between the multiple identities and worlds in which we inhabit. We Weren't Born Yesterday is an attempt to give voice to some of our issues and stories within the community. It considers both the history of queer identities in the Middle East, as well as the contemporary realities that face our community in Australia. The following interviews and stories attempt to deal with issues of inclusion and exclusion, and racism and homophobia, without falling into the traps of orientalising the queer Arab community in Australia. First off, we hear from Sahar Amer, Chair of the Department of Arabic Language and Cultures at the University of Sydney. Sahar has published extensively on Arabic and French literature.
The representation of queer sexualities in Arabic treatises from the 9th and 10th century is quite amazing, especially considering how taboo the topic has become in contemporary Arab and Muslim societies today. So I was always amazed in my research how much material and how openly Arabic literature and Arabic scientific treatises discuss non-normative sexualities. And that's from the earliest erotic treatise in Arabic, which dates from the middle of the 9th century and which is called the Encyclopedia of Pleasure. Sexuality in these texts is presented in a very natural and non-judgmental way. The human being is presented as someone who has various ways of expressing their sexuality, and homosexuality and lesbianism are just one of many different types of sexualities that they might express. So this is probably the first most surprising thing. The other thing that is very surprising is how in the prologue of many of these erotic treatises, the word erotic treatise is probably like confusing because in the contemporary sense, eroticism doesn't mean the same thing as it did in medieval tradition. When I say erotic treatises in the medieval Arabic tradition, I really mean encyclopedic compilations that span all known disciplines of the period. So that's science, theology, poetry, literature, medicine. And basically, the author is trying to say everything that was known about that topic up to the time that the writer was composing his writing. And the authors of these texts are very important jurists and clerics and theologians and jurists. So this is very serious matter that they're describing. This is not meant to titillate. This is really meant to inform and to educate. And their goal is to show that, is to basically teach other Muslims how to be a good human being and a good Muslim. And for them, sexuality is actually a way that needs to be perfected so that the human being can be a better being and therefore a better Muslims, but a better Muslim. So this is always very surprising that non-normative sexuality itself is an art that can be perfected in order to be a better Muslim. I think that it's probably fair to say that most likely, yes, attitudes, social attitudes have changed, and it's unclear when they have changed, of course. That's always the big question. Why did they change? When did they change? But there was definitely a much bigger social acceptance of non-normative sexual behaviors and attitudes and orientations throughout the Middle Ages in Muslim-majority societies than we have today. The gays and lesbians, we have many traditions that tell us that, for example, lesbians used to hold literary salons in which they attracted the most sophisticated people of their age. There's a lot of poetry written about them, and that also discuss their love and devotion to each other and presenting it as a model of love and devotion. So there is definitely a literary tradition that talks about it very openly, and some evidence of social attitudes that seem to accept much more willingly than we might expect such behaviors. Language is a very important indicator of that change in social attitude. So in the medieval texts that I have studied, every chapter has dozens or 20 or 25 words referring to different types of love or different sexual organ used in sexual behaviors. So it's extraordinary to read all of those terms. And to think about how much this vocabulary, this very open and explicit vocabulary, has completely been lost in contemporary society that now uses a very limited vocabulary and a very pejorative terminology to address same-sex behaviors. I think that the terminology, the attitude towards homosexuality in contemporary Arab societies is very much indebted to European colonialism. I think that a lot of the changes that that have occurred in Arab and Muslim societies have to do with the way Europeans in the 18th and 19th century, when they came to colonize the Middle East. Of course, it wasn't called the Middle East then, but the Muslim-majority societies of the time, they brought with them their own perspectives and their own views about sexuality. And this is a very Victorian type of attitude, very moralistic attitude, very heterosexual attitude. And they had to justify their military incursions in the Middle East. And part of that justification was to say there's too much sexuality there. And so we need to civilize these people. We need to show them the right way to be behaving. And the right way for Europeans at the time was a heterosexual, very binary type of sexuality. And so it's that imposition of a very European, very binary heterosexuality that led to forgetting the heritage, the medieval heritage of non-normative sexuality, and to the adoption of Western norms and Western linguistic terminology to speak about homosexuality. I will talk about these words, but I want to also begin by saying I'm sorry to even say those words, because for a lot of Arabs and Muslims, these are extremely pejorative terms. Again, the topic of homosexuality is so taboo that the terms used to it are perceived as slang and very negative. And perhaps the two most common terms that are used to speak about gay individuals is the word shaz. And shaz means a pervert, deviant, abnormal. And in the feminine would be sheza, and that would be the same thing. Or the word luti, and the word luti comes from the story of Lot, which is the same story that we also find in the Bible. And so luti just means basically of the family of Lot, so someone who has acted like Lot. And so luti, or in the feminine lutia. And then there's also a term called khawal, or muhannath, for an effeminate man. And for women specifically, the terms that are used are suhaqiyya. And suhaqiyya is considered extraordinarily pejorative and sexual and slang and vulgar. And it means, it basically comes from the words to grind. And this is basically the sexual act between women, which is supposed to be like a grinding behavior. And other terms are like sharmuta. And sharmuta means prostitute, and so this again shows the promiscuity that is believed or that is considered to be very much intrinsically related to non-normative sexuality. I think those terms are considered so negative that a lot, in fact, I would say a majority of gays in the Arab world today don't even want to ever think that they could be reclaimed. And this is something that actually I have written about to try to, you know, open the discussion about the medieval tradition that offers some positive, some or at least neutral terms to speak about sexuality. And one of them being even suhaqiyya, in to mean the grinder, the grinding behavior of women. This word actually is the one used oftentimes in medieval tradition, and I have suggested that it might be reclaimed, like the word queer or the word sapphism or the word lesbian, that used to be considered extremely negative also in European discourse. But interestingly, this suggestion has been met with a lot of shock and resistance among most Arabs that I have spoken with. They cannot even conceive that these terms can be reclaimed. So LGBTIQ communities and organizations have endeavored to develop a more positive vocabulary to speak about homosexuality in the Arab world, and they rightly believe that this is a very important step towards making LGBT groups feel more confident and more comfortable in their identity. However, the vocabulary that has been developed by these groups are actually modeled on the European structures of sexuality. So, for example, one of the terms that they suggest being very positive is the word mithliya jinsiya. And mithliya jinsiya is literally a direct translation of the word homosexuality. So mithli means homo, the same as, and jinsiya means the sexuality. So it's a homosexual. And I find that term, which is now often used by very liberal newspapers. So it's really only the most liberal, the most leftist, the most open-minded newspapers who use this terminology, not very well known in the general public even, who continue to use the very negative vocabulary I was speaking about earlier. And whereas for me, using a term that is modeled on Western European construction is completely unhelpful in promoting a more accepting and inclusive attitude towards homosexuals, because we have to remember that the word homosexuality had as its beginning a very medical discourse. This is a scientific word that sought to categorize gays in Europe as medically deficient. And there was a huge fight by the LGBT groups in Europe and the United States to get rid of that medical category from the DSM-3. And this has happened only in the 1970s that it was removed as a medical diagnosis. So I feel like, you know, why would Arabs and Muslims then go and reclaim a word that was used for so long to medically treat and categorize gays? I don't think that that's a very productive way of showing acceptance to Arab and Muslim gays. Um, very interesting how the representation of homosexuality in film has developed in the Arab world today. I would say until very recently and since the beginning of cinema, and it was Egyptian cinema to start with, this was like the Hollywood of the Arab world, the representation of homosexuality was always presented through cross-dressing. So it was always made in as a comedic relief, as like a man who dresses like a woman or a woman who dresses like a man, and just presented as a comic interlude in the middle of the film. But the film always returned at the very end to a very heterosexual, normative ending. But still, I think that today we can look back at those film and see how through cross-dressing there was an effort to perhaps gesture at different modes of social and sexual behaviors. But recently, I would say in the last maybe 10 years, there has been a huge increase in the production of films and literature, both in print, but increasingly also online, in blogs, that are written by gay and lesbian individuals who are trying to present a whole new representation of homosexuality. And I think that this literature is, until today, remains very understudied and very unknown by a great number of the public in the Arab world. But I think that it's something that I have been amazed at and I've started working on, because there is now a canon that we can say of Arab gay and lesbian in particular, both literature and film. Yes, I organized a queer Arab film festival at the University of Sydney this semester. And the goal of that film festival was to present in the open and in an academic setting a discussion about non-normative sexuality through film. And this effort was basically to present films from the 1940s, 1950s, so the very classical period of Arabic cinema, until the most recent production of Arabic films and also documentaries. And every film was introduced by an academic, and there was a discussion that followed each film. And we had an immense success with this film because it's the first such film that is offered and open to the community outside of specialized gay events. And so I think that this is really very important in the act of trying again to discuss this very taboo topic and to bring clarity and to answer questions and to encourage people to view homosexuality in Arab and Muslim society as a central part of Arab societies today. Well, I think that the queer Arab community is headed in different direction depending on where we're speaking. So I think in the diaspora, so in America, in Europe, in Australia, I think that there is really very important strides that are made in attempting to bring support and visibility and understanding around the topics of gay and lesbian orientations. I think that in the Arab world also there is that very important strides being made through the literature and films that I was discussing. But at the same time that we have this very important production and activism, which is very hopeful, we also have a big crackdown from the government of Arab societies against anything really that challenges or that is perceived to challenge the government that are currently in place. So since the Arab Spring, for example, we saw at the very beginning of the Arab Spring, in the first months after the uprising in 2011, there was so much hope and so much excitement across Arab societies in what they saw as potentially bringing liberation and equal rights to gays and lesbians. And I did a lot of research then about the organizations. There were new organizations taking form and everything, and people did not care or did not seem to care whether you're gay or lesbian, as long as you were for the revolution and participating in that general cause. But unfortunately, things have changed. As we all know, the revolutions across the Arab world did not lead to the democratic changes that was hoped for. And so gay and lesbians also are suffering from the failure, really, of these revolutions. And like I keep reading in the newspapers, how much crackdown there is in Egypt in particular, but it's not the only country, against gays and lesbians. And so the governments are really cracking down against anything that might be perceived as challenging them, as well as attempting to present a very solid conservative front to the general public and fighting what they perceive as a Western borrowing of certain behaviors, instead of thinking about homosexuality as something that is existing in every society in the world, that there's no society that is imposing homosexuality on another. So a big crackdown in Arab societies today, which is very unfortunate, of course.
You're listening to We Weren't Born Yesterday. We just heard from Zaha Amer from the University of Sydney talking about language and representation within Arabic literature and film. Next up, Fatima Mawas chats to Fadia Habboud, director of I Love You But, a web series about queer Arab life in Sydney.
Marhaba, we have with us today Fadia Habboud, the writer and director of I Love You But, and my name is Fatima Mawas. So tell us a bit about I Love You But for those that haven't actually seen it.
I Love You But is a web series. We've had two seasons. So the first one was out 2012. Is that right? End of 2012, beginning of 2013, really. And that was self-funded. And it was 9 episodes, 3 minutes. And the basis of the story is a gay Lebanese guy and lesbian, both of them are Lebanese, in a marriage of convenience, and they're living a lie, but they're living it up. So I just did the first one, you know, kind of myself, but it was still, we had like a little small crew and just everyone helping and making it happen, and it did well. And then the second one, we applied for funding and we got some money and we made part two, series two, which was 10 episodes that were 5 minutes. And that was released at the first half of this year.
Okay, so the storyline follows Sam and Muna as the two key characters, and you know, we see their mothers and some of their dramas and their lovers.
I love my mum, but I can never tell her I'm gay. She'd kill me! Or she would make herself sick and die, and then I've killed her.
And what about me? I'm a man, and my parents are still telling me what time I have to be home by. There is no way my parents could accept me being gay.
Well, people actually live like that here, you know, in Australia. People live like that probably a bit more so in the Arab world, and probably like all over the world. Since I've made it, people from all over the world have written saying, you know, we get that, I know that, my friend lives like that. But I suppose I wanted to show living in the closet from an Arab Australian perspective through this kind of extreme situation that happens, still happens. You know, people do get married for convenience and you know, have to live that life and that lie. So I kind of wanted to show the stories of people that I know living that life and how it's possible to have both. I mean, yeah, it's possible to have both. It's possible to have a fulfilling life as a lesbian and have, you know, your family, your culture still part of your life.
Exactly, because the concept of coming out is a concept, you know, in the queer community as one that is, you know, when will it happen? But amongst minority communities and ethnic communities, it's not necessarily the concept of when is it going to happen or if it will ever happen. It's just sometimes not even a consideration, is it?
No, it's usually not at all. Most people I know aren't out. That's just the way it is. I mean, it's an unspoken. People live, you know, as they get older, they manage maybe to squirm out of getting married and they just live out of home. A lot of older Arabs even still live at home, you know, unmarried. But coming out is never, it's not really an option for a lot of people because it really means losing your family or shaming your family. And it's just, a lot of us can't live without our families.
Yeah, that's very true because, you know, especially Arab communities and Arab families, they're very much family-centric.
To some people, what we're doing is weird. We're leading double lives, but that's what we have to do.
As for our parents, what they don't know won't kill them. But will they kill us if they find out?
They'll never find out.
They better not.
You know what? I don't think I've copped a lot of flack. To be honest, I think people are very supportive because they're saying finally someone's saying something. It's not changing, making dramatic changes, you know, in society. But when you to see yourself reflected on screen is a joy, you know what I mean? And it's not derogatory. I think I've had like, you know, one really negative comment on YouTube. But it's really because it's coming from within the community, you know what I mean? Yeah. The stories are real. The people I'm working with. It's all kind of, you know, there's an authenticity about it. So the flack from the community, you mean the wider community, the people that would normally condemn homosexuality, the Arabs, I don't think it's reached them just yet. You know, I think in Lebanon, it was nominated in their social media awards, their first social media awards, which were actually really big. It was nominated for the most engaging YouTube channel. And we were up against like a shopping center, a TV station. And I thought that was huge because, you know, homosexuality is illegal all over the Arab world still. Lebanon's probably the most kind of open, you could say, but it's still illegal. But I think that was, you know, what does that say? It says that people are opening up to it, but If certain parts of the community were to actually look at it clearly, maybe to have watched it, they probably wouldn't have agreed with the nomination. But maybe it slips through the cracks, you know what I mean? Because it just appears to be a story about a married couple. You know, they're married and they kind of have the same problems as lots of married couples do with the added dilemma of really having other lovers and having this big lie.
It is on YouTube, and so who wants to see queer Arabs on screen the most? Like, where
older, actually. I thought it would be a younger audience, but it's an older demographic, like over 35, like in terms of the majority, and all over the world, really all over the world. Oh, like there's this one particular episode. It went off in Saudi Arabia.
Oh, you're so hot. You're really hot, yeah. You look just like a grinder profile.
Why wouldn't I? It's in season one, and it's an episode where Sam opened it up with these two sets of feet intertwined. Like, you know, they were having sex, these two boys. And I specifically, in season one, I wanted it to be a little bit more modest. I didn't want to show too much flesh. So I didn't want to show sex, yeah. I didn't want it to be banned, you know. So I had this opening shot of these two men. The whole sex scene was shot on their feet, intertwined, yeah. And it was was a great, it was a great way to show the two of them. They were talking through sex and their feet really reacted to what they were saying. Anyway, this particular episode, the beginning of it in particular, well, that section of it was viewed over like 30,000 times in Saudi Arabia. And you can tell they don't watch the whole episode. And...
do you bottom?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I'm a top.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But, you know, it's nice to watch the small pockets of the world that it reaches. It's done really well in, like, other English-speaking countries. You know, it's done well in America, Canada, and Lebanon, of course, because it's very Lebanese.
So the last episode of season one, you know, spoiler alert, people, but Muna and Sash break up at the end of season one. The breakup was shot in a club called Club Arab, which is an Arab queer night that you also run in Sydney, isn't that right?
Yeah. Look, the first season, because it was on no money, all eps, all the most of the eps, well, one to eight, eps one to eight were all shot in my house, right? So ep nine, we managed to, and we wrote it, I wrote it like that so that it was just doable. But ep nine, I wrote in a party scene because we organised, me and another woman called Alisa Ghazal, who you'll also see in the series as Muna's mother. She plays a great Arab mum.
حبيبي انت هون
How are you?
انا كتير منيحه كيف العريس
I'm good انت what are you doing here
انا جاي اطيش شويه ورقاني
ورقاني
ايش بعمل لكم طبخه
okay. And she's a big butch dyke, so she plays it really well, and so her and I, we've worked together for years on different things, and Club Ara is one of them. So Club Ara, people that don't speak Arabic say Club Iraq. And hara means to sweat, and it's also a drink, a very, very potent drink, alcoholic drink, and that's why it's called Club Hara, and it's a queer Arab dance party, and it's been going for a long time, since 2002, I think. 2002, we have a couple of parties a year. It's amazing. So what we do is we just play Arabic music only. It's, you know, it's imagine going to a nightclub and just hearing Arab music, Fats. I know you would love that. And, you know, that's what happens. So people get to dance with their lover. It's like we said, like I said, like most Arabs aren't out. So you don't get a chance to go to a wedding listening to Arabic music and have your partner with you and be able to dance to that music. So Club Ara gives people the chance to do all of that in what feels like a family atmosphere, you know, and it's really, I don't know, it's broken ground for a lot of different reasons, I think, just by the sheer fact that we play and not, you know, Arabic music in a proper club. We've been going for such a long time, and it's really brought out the Arabs in Sydney. I think it has, you know, there were gatherings. I was living outside of my parents' home. I was living in my own home, and people were gathering there. People, queer Arabs, were gathering there and going and having little parties like that. Yeah, because Oxford Street was a bit of a, like, you'd be scared to go because you wouldn't know who from your straight friends or family might be there and bump into you. So you'd be scared to go if you were gay and an Arab and you weren't out. So we were having a lot of house parties, and that's, we were having them there. Alisa and house parties with double, with, you know, the drum, with argile. Like, it was proper ade. It was a proper, like, setting that you imagined, that you would happen at home, at your parents' house, but with your friends, with your gay friends, with more, just crazy. Alisa went at the time, she was overseas. She came back. And she said, and she experienced something in London called Club Kali. And it's, I haven't been there, but she said it was this, the idea of going out and listening to non-English speaking music in a club kind of thing. And it was all that kind of, I wouldn't say world, I would say like just that mixture of Arab, Indian, you know, just music in different dialects, you know what I mean, with different beats as well, different sounds. And it was playing in this club in London, and it was really eclectic. And she said, I reckon we could do this here. Let's do it. Let's have a go. What you do, what happens in the lounge room, let's take it to a club. And I'm like, are you serious? Who's going to go? There was this club on Parramatta Road called Caesars. All the queers used to go there because it was out of the city, out of Oxford Street, and everyone, you could park behind it, and everyone, you know, just felt safe in there. And all the wogs went there, and we decided to hold it there in a small room upstairs. And it was this, honestly, we made these little cards and we gave them out to people, and it was the year of the gay games, and so there was just lots of events, and so we would go out and give them out to everyone. And we actually just didn't know what to expect. And the night came, and there was like this lineup of people up the stairs. And we were standing there. I was walking down the stairs saying to everyone, do you know we're playing Arabic music inside? Yeah, yeah. I go, okay. I seriously was so freaked out. The first party, there were 400 people. The next party, there were 1,000 people. And we moved venues. It was just... and. Because there wasn't much happening in Sydney that was alternative. There was alternative, but this is the alternative of the alternative. You know what I mean? Yeah. So we don't have any. We've got a Facebook page. So if, I think you can find us at Club Ida on Facebook.
And what's the website for I Love You But?
iluvubut.tv.
iluvubut.tv, people. Get onto it. Season 1 and 2, you can stream online. Written and directed by Fadia Aboud, and it's definitely something that you should be watching if you want to understand the queer life of Arab communities in Sydney and in Australia in general. All right, Fadia, is there anything else you think we should talk about to those that don't know much about the Arab queer community?
Look, I just wanted to say, even though I said homosexuality is illegal in the Arab world, there are a couple of orgs in Lebanon that are registered orgs that, you know, promote, you know, gay rights. One of them is Helam, the other one is Meem, and there's been a couple of publications as well. So I just, that's all. I mean, there is stuff happening overseas. There is. And just recently there was the first feature film made with the protagonist as, you know, a gay character, a gay male character. It's Moroccan, and I haven't seen, I've heard a lot about it. It's doing the festival circuit now. And it's called Salvation Army. And it's really, I mean, there's been films with, feature films with some, you know, a gay character here or there, but they haven't really stood out. And I think this is the first one to do it, and it's getting really good reviews. So there is change happening. I think the web series, like I think I Love You But was first to do it on the small screen, but I think this film Salvation Army has managed to, you know, have the story of a gay man in Morocco on the big screen. So that's exciting. And it's written by him, it's directed by him. It's his life story, really.
So it'll be very authentic.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you were just listening to Fadia Aboud, writer and director of the web series I Love You But and co-organiser of Club Ada, which is a queer Arab night held in Sydney as part of Mardi Gras and in October. And my name is Fatima Mawas. Shukran, Fadia. Yalla, see you, bye.
Thanks, Fatima. Love you, babe. Mwah. Bye.
That was Fadia Aboud, director of I Love You But and organiser of Club Arab, talking to Fatima Mawas.
You're listening to
We Weren't Born Yesterday.
Exploring Queer Heritage.
A project by the Queering the Air Collective
at 3CR Community Radio.
Now, two people share accounts of their identities and experiences both within the queer and Arab communities.
Assalamu alaikum, Esmi Q, and I'm 30 years old, second for Sydney, and I'm gay. Okay, I was 7 years old. وأنا كنت بحبه كتير قوي وأحنا كنت بتلعب games كتير قوي. في يوم واحدة أحنا كنت بتقعد في البارك وفي الجنينة وأحنا very very bored. بعدين كنت بفكر عايز حاجة تعمل. بعدين أنا قلت هو how about we make a gay club? So we did, and we just practiced, like, we just sort of did sort of sexual activities together in this sort of club that we had created. So, yeah, that's what we did. there was one في يوم واحدة أمت الصحبي. She came to the bedroom and she caught us sort of in the act. And from that day on, I wasn't allowed to see him again. So, في year 2000, سنة 2000, أنا كنت في مدرسة James Cook Boys in Sydney. And أنا شفته في المدرسة, بس هو مش بفكر أنا مين, هو... He forgot who I was and had no recollection of who I was. Okay, Aywa and I'm out to my family, Aywa, but it didn't go too well. Yani Akhuya, he outed me to my father. That was like 2002. Yani, my father, yani, هو زعلان مني قوي عشان أنا gay. هو كنت بتقول يعني ارمي كل حاجة في الزبالة وتعمل ودو ولازم روح صلي عشان احنا مسلمة ويعني homosexuality يعني حرام وكل حاجة زي كده. بس يعني so I ended up listening to him and I threw everything out and everything, and then 2 years later, several years later, here I am still gay. I didn't really do anything, so. Yani, with gay culture, I kind of feel like I'm an outcast because of the way I present myself. Just because it's the whole, you know, كل حد جسمه جميلة قوي و gym fit و عندهم فلوس كتير و بتسوق عربية حلوة والساكن في البيت حلوة وكل حاجة زي كده وهم بيفكر في ال يعني they're very tuned into pop culture very much and all that, and that's just not me. أيوة أنا سافرت القاهرة مصر last year and I managed to, you know, get onto Grindr and meet a lot of people online. I was able to meet a lot of friends and I got to go out even to a gay bar over there. So, yeah. Within Arabic culture, yani, it's haram to be gay. It's 100% haram. So it's not really accepted, but it does happen quite often over in Cairo. It happens. There's a lot of gay people there. But it's very underground as well. Like, all the gay stuff that happens in Cairo, for example, it's all underground. Just because of who I am and what I am, I definitely don't fit within Arabic culture. I guess also because of being... like living in Australia and being away from Egypt for so long, that's part of why as well. So في ناس في الشارع هم بتسألني أنا من فين أنت من فين. أنا بتقول أنا مصري, أنا من مصر. أنا مش بتقول أنا أسترالي. و
مرحبا, اليوم حأحكي معكم عن topic هي شوية sensitive. هي topic عن حضرتي. أنا بنت عربية وبنت من بيت إنه traditional عرب, وأنا كوي. فحب أحكي معكم الجميع عن كيف الحياة البنت, حب تعيش حياتها مع المرأة اللي بتحب, بس كمان حب تخلي أهلها بحياتها. هلا كلياتنا بنعرف إنه هي حياة صعبة, وما حدا إنه بيحب هالشي على حدا تاني. فحابين نحكي بالموضوع شوية, وإن شاء الله إنه تاخدوا منا شي. امبارح اتصلت فيني صديقتي, هي كمان كوي إلى شي سنة مع صاحبتها, واتصلت فيني وقلت لي إنه تركتها. وتركتها لأن صارت إنه كتير عليا إنه هي منا أوت مع أهلها, وشي صعب كتير كل ما بتكون مع حبيبتها إنه فزعونة إنه إما تتصل فيها أو تسألها شو عم تعملي أو تزعل منها إنه تأخر تيجي على البيت. وكمان إنه حب إنه هي أهلها يتعرفوا على حبيبتها إنه يشوفوا قداش مبسوطة فيها, بس للآن إنه انفصلوا وتأثرت كتير. فتصلت فيني وهي أصغر مني بشي 6 سنين, اتصلت فيني وعم تسألني إنه شو بدي أعمل, إنه بتفتكري إنه فيني يكون مع الرجال لو ما أنا بحبه. وشي صعب كتير إنه ما كنت عارفة شو بدي رد عليها. فقلت لها إنه أنت بدك تفكري عن حولك, بدك تفكري إنه إذا شلتي كل الستريس من راسك بس حطيتي ستريس على قلبك, يعني أي وحدة إنه بتفضلي. فهالشغلة إنه صعب كتير, بس حبيت إنه شارك معكم هالقصة لأن بعرف إنه في أكتريتنا بهالموضوع بهالحالة. وبس إنه إذا كلنا ياتنا بنعرف إنه منا لوحدنا, وفي عالم العرب يكونوا بلبنان, يكونوا بأستراليا, يكونوا بسعودية, يكونوا بمصر, إنه شعبنا قوي وشعب العرب الكوي أقوى. Don't give up. كمان حب لكم عن قصة صغيرة. هلا إنه شخص الجاي صعب كتير الحياة, منعرف هالشي, بس أوقات يعني منشوف الكازن, ابن عمي, ابن خالتي إنه يمكن هو يكون جاي. فأول مرة زرت لبنان تعرفت على ابن عمي, وشفت إنه هو كان شاب إنه عمره صغير, كان شي 14-15 سنة, بس حركاته يعني من حركاته تعرفت إنه هو كان جاي, كان يحب ليدي غاغا وبيونسي, وإنه يعرف كل الأغنية والدانس موفز. بس يعني لو ما عارفة إنه هو جاي, أنا إنه افتكرت إنه هو منو عارف هو جاي, وكمان منو عارف إنه أنا جاي. بس دلت باتصال معه, بس رجعت على أستراليا وإنه نتصل على الواتساب وعلى الفيسبوك ونحكي ونشارك ونضحك, بس ولا مرة إنه حكينا عن الموضوع الجاي. إجا مرة إنه ما بعرف شو صار, شو إجا على بالي ليش عملته, بس اتصلت فيه وقلت له بس بدي إياك تعرف إنه أنا بحبك لو كيف ما كنت, وما تخاف إنه لازم تخبي شيء عني. وبلشت أحكي معه عن فيلم هي فيلم فوغ, فيلم عن فوغ اسمه Paris is Burning, وبعثت له اللينك وقلت له شفت هالفيلم شيء, لأن كنت حابة إنه أحكي معه وأفتح الموضوع معه. قال لي لا ما شفت هالفيلم, بس إنه أنا كتير بشارك مع العالم الجاي وأنا بفتكر إنه ما لازم يكونوا متخبيين. ومن هالموضوع فتح إنه هو جاي. قلت له لو ما أنت جاي أنا ثاني بحبك وبديك تعرف إنه أنت إنه قريب على القلب وكتير أنت سمارت, وبس إنه طلع على بالك وانتبه. دغري سألني انت كمان جاي؟ قلت له اه, وانبسطنا كتير على الواتساب, يعني شي دلينا شي ساعتين ثلاثة بس نبعت ايموتيكونز الرقص والكلابينج والمصور. وهي كمان شي يعني اولاد العرب بيعرفوا, لان كمان يعني لما بتشوف ابن عم انه كمان هو جاي بتنبسط كتير. ولما عرفت أنا إنه لما هو قال لي إنه هو جاي كان بالوقت هو بباريس, قام دغري عملت تيكت على باريس ورحت وانبسطت كتير مع بعضنا. وتغيرت يعني معي كليا, لأن أول مرة كان في حدا بعائلتي إنه عارفين عني ويسألوا عني وعن صديقتي ويسألوا إنه وكمان إنه يسبني لما أنا أكون مني منيحة مع حبيبتي. فانبسطت كتير وحبيت أشارك فيك معكم عن هالموضوع. هأحكي معكم شوية عن حالي. هلأ لما أنا أول مرة حبيت بنت يعني استغربت كتير, لقيت إنه كان في بنت بالصفي إنه كنت كتير attracted إلى, إنه كنت بدي دال معه بالصف نضحك مع بعضنا ناكل على اللانش مع بعضنا. واستغربت كتير إنه لقاش كتير شدات إليها, ما كنت عارفة. بس ما إجت على بالي أبدا إنه يمكن يكون جاي, لأن ولك ما كان في أحدا حوالي كان جاي. بس تركت المدرسة فتت على الجامعة, بعدين بلشت الشغل, تعرفت على شخص انه هي جاي ودغري شافتني مع انه كنت انا متحجبة, شافتني ودغري عرفت انه انا كنت ليزبين. فحبت انه تخليني فوت على حياتها, اتعرف على اصدقاء واتعرف على حبيبتها, لان هي كمان كانت عرب, كنت بنت عرب ومسلمة. وشدت كتير علي إنه إلا إنه أنا مظبوط أنا كوير أنا ليزبيان, بس حولت ما إلا لشي خمس سنين. بعد شي خمس ست سنين قلت لي تفضلي على الفطور عنده, لأن كنت عارفة إنه أنا كنت صايمة. قلت لي إذا في حدا إنه إلي لا تجي معكي, أي حدا ما بتحبي إلي لهم يجي معكي. وبهالوقت إنه أنا كنت شايفة كان إلي حبيبي, وكنا شي سنة ونص مع بعض, بس ما قلت لها لصديقتي عنا. فجبتها على الفطور, وبعد ما أكلنا وخدنا ديزرت وتهضمنا الأكل كنا عم نحكي عن إنه كيف هي قلت لها لأهله إنه هي جاي, وبعدين إنه ما حبوا هالشغلة, قام رجعت قلت لهم إنه هي منا جاي, وكيف يعني كيف حبيبتها هي انه كيف اهلها تعرفوا عليا. وبعدين يعني بالجو قلت لهم, انبسطوا وفتحوا قنينة شامبين ويعني احتفلنا مع بعضنا. هالوقت بحياتي يعني بتذكرها كتير وبنبسط كتير. لو ما يعني هلا اهلي بيعرفوا, واوقات يعني بيعملوا حولهم كان ما بيعرفوا, بس إنه الأوقات هيك الصغار يلي فينا إنه نتذكر ونحتفل فيهم ونبتسم معهم, يعني هذا هالحياة.
This is We Weren't Born Yesterday, and you just heard two testimonials from people within the queer Arab community. We Weren't Born Yesterday is produced by the Queering the Air Collective at 3CR and financially supported by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. Our thanks to Saha Hamer, Faja Aboud, Fatima Mawas, Q Ghazi, and all the other interviewees. Thanks also to Empat Lima for providing music and to 2SER and the Community Radio Network for recording and technical support. My name is Sari Zaniniri. Thank you for listening to We Weren't Born Yesterday.
Thank you for listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online.